I Eat Green with Bhavani Jaraf, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful, beautiful Wednesday. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm very happy to be here with you today at 5 o'clock. But I want to let you all know that starting March 7th, next week will be my last show at 5 o'clock. And then the following week, starting March 7th, my new time will be 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on the same PRN.FM radio station. And I'll be here with you still for an hour, but now it will be from 4 to 5. Again, not next week. Next week will still be 5, but starting the week after, I'll be here with you at 4 o'clock. So I'm very happy to be here today. I have an exciting show. I have my guest today is Sarah Gabriel, and she is the director of the Homegrown Institute, which is a very cool organization in the Philly area. And before that, she was living in Colorado, a real mover and shaker, and I'm really excited to tell you more about her a little bit later in the show. And I want to share with you what's been going on this week. Last Wednesday, as many of you know, I recorded the show from up in Albany, and I was part of the No Farms, No Food day of lobbying our senators and assembly people. And it was a really wonderful experience. And then on Friday, I took part in a fracking demonstration on Long Island in front of Senator Martin's office and handed over petitions with names of 1,700 people along with organizations on Long Island that signed on towards anti-fracking. And this movement is really gaining momentum, thank God, because it is really a bad thing, and nothing good can come from fracking. So we need as many people to learn more about fracking, what it is. You can Google it, but it's the process of extracting gas that's stored underneath the ground hundreds and hundreds of feet down into the earth or into the bedrock, and they, in order to extract it, they actually have to go down and put millions of gallons of water and toxic chemicals and create an explosion basically underground to release the gas. And there's no way that they can capture all the gas that they release, so it releases methane into the air, it pollutes the water. A lot of the cities that and towns that have allowed fracking are now starting to see some of the negative impacts that this processes had. So this Saturday from 1 to 3 at St. John the Divines in Manhattan, which is at 125th and Morningside, there will be a large demonstration and rally inside the church. And if you've never been to the church, that's a reason to go alone. St. John the Divine is an unbelievable space. I used to go there on a weekly basis when there was a teacher named Hilda that used to give meditations and evenings of spiritual awakenings, and they were just wonderful community events, and they happened every week, I believe on a Thursday. But anyway, so I used to go to St. John the Divine all the time. Haven't been there in many years, so I'm looking forward to just going inside that awesome church again. So it's this Saturday. If you can make it, we'd love your support. Really get on board this fight. You're going to be hearing more and more about fracking, and it's really important for all of us to take part in preventing this from taking hold, and preventing it from being a process that is accepted by the general public. So we really need you to stand together with others that are concerned. So I continue to be in the planning stages with a steering committee to organize the next second annual Long Island Small Farm Summit. That's scheduled for April 14th, and it is going to be just an awesome event. Last year, we sold out. We were at SUNY Old Westbury, and Joel Salatin was our keynote speaker. And so in anticipation of making room for more people, last year actually was even on a Friday. This one is going to be on a Saturday. So we have room for 1,100 people at Hofstra University. Will Allen from Growing Power in Milwaukee is one of our keynote speakers. And Chef Ann Cooper, also known as the Renegade Lunch Lady, is our other keynote speaker. And it is a full day of panel presentations, workshops, hands-on workshops, entertainment. We have Tom Chapin coming from 5 to 6 doing a family concert. If you haven't heard his new CD, I played it last week on the radio show because he was my guest, called Give Peas a Chance. It's a wonderful, wonderful CD. So he will be putting on a concert, and there's just going to be so much stuff going on. The hardest part is going to be deciding where you want to go. It includes lunch. If you register early, early bird registration fee, I believe, is $25, and it goes up to $35. So, you know, go on the website, Long Island Small Farm Central, and or Google the Long Island Small Farm Summit, and you'll find all the information you need. So that's really going to be just a great, great event. So some of the other great events coming up this weekend is the Just Food Conference starting Friday and Saturday. It is sold out, but there is a waiting list. So if you're interested in that, it's at the high school in Manhattan, the finance school, the something in finance school. I actually don't have the information with me. But Google, you know, go on to the website of Just Food Conference and you can find out that information. There's the 13th Annual Organic Turf and Tree Show taking place next Wednesday, February 29th, at Farmingdale State University. And that's a great opportunity to learn about organic tree and shrub care. And for those of us that have some property and we are trying to grow fruit trees in an organic manner, this is a really great opportunity to learn about how to do that. There is also a New York Small Farm Summit, not to be confused with the Long Island Small Farm Summit, but the New York Small Farm Summit is taking place in 5 different locations within the state simultaneously. So to find out information, find out the closest gathering to where you live, you can go on to the New York Small Farm Summit website. For Long Islanders, there's one taking place out in Riverhead. And my understanding is there will be local presentations, but there will also be webinar type opportunities so that all 5 locations will be connected at for some portion of the event. And lunch is included there as well, so check that out. And then on March 1st, there is a presentation from the New York Botanical Gardens in Manhattan. This should be really great about green roofing. And Annie Novak from the Eagle Street Rooftop Farm in Brooklyn will be the guest speaker there. And the idea of growing our food on the rooftops in Manhattan is just so exciting. I mean, if you really want to take it to the next level and think about how many buildings there are and if every building had a garden on it, we could really feed Manhattan. It's really an unbelievable thought. So if you have a building and you would like to learn about the possibilities of putting your farm or garden up on top of the roof, come down to the New York Botanical Gardens, but it's in their New York Midtown Center, which is on 20 West 44th Street. So you do not have to go to the Bronx for this. Or to Brooklyn, it's right in Manhattan, 20 West 44th Street. So Google that if you are interested. And, of course, there's the New York Restaurant Show next week, March 4th through the 6th at the Javits Center. And that's something I always like to go to. And then there's a conference coming up March 24th and 25th. And my guest today will be talking more about this conference. It's called Springing Good Intentions into Action. And it's being put on by the Homegrown Institute Conference. And it is going to be an unbelievable 2-day event with workshops and hands-on opportunities. So like I said, when Sarah Gabriel comes on later in the show, she will tell us more about this event. And it just continues and continues. The Long Island CSA Fair, first time ever. We're having a CSA Fair at the Cinema Arts Center on Saturday, March 31st. And that is going to be a gathering of all the different CSAs on Long Island. So if you are not part of a CSA yet, and for those that do not know, it's Community Supported Agriculture. If you would like to join a CSA or just learn more about CSAs, come on down to the Cinema Arts Center on March 31st from 10 to 1 and meet all the different farmers and check out the different farms and the different options. CSAs where you can purchase ahead of time a share into a farm, and every week you will get a beautiful box of organically fresh picked that morning vegetables for your week's supply. So that should be a great event. And on the same day, unfortunately the same day, so I can't be at both, there is also a conference going on called Once Upon a Hearth, Nourishing Ourselves, Enriching Our Culture Through Food. And that's going to be taking place at the Waldorf School in Garden City, put on by the Winkler Center for Adult Education. And it is going to be a full day as well of information, talks, speakers, panels, hands-on opportunities. It's a celebration of our culture of food. And the primary goal of this conference is to offer a humanizing counterweight to our mainstream unconscious relationship with food. So if you are on Long Island and you are in the area, from 9 to 3, actually even if you're not in the area, it's certainly worth a trip out to Long Island to go to that. So that's about it. There's a lot going on. I hope to see many of you on Saturday at the fracking rally at St. John the Divine. So now, of course, before I invite my guest on, I want to share with you a recipe that I made yesterday for some of my clients, and they were so good. Very often, it's really hard to find good gluten-free baked goods. And so as I come up with a recipe that I think is really exceptional, I do want to share it with you. And this one is also dairy-free. So let me give it to you now. The ingredients are 2 cups of gluten-free flour. And there's many different gluten-free flours. I mix 2 different ones. I usually am using Bob's Red Mill and Arrowhead Mills. So 1 cup of each. Then you need 1.5 teaspoons of xanthan gum. Now, xanthan gum is this weird thing. It's actually from a plant. But it's the ingredient in salad dressings that makes all the herbs float and makes the salad dressing look fake. So I'm not a big fan of this stuff. However, when you're baking gluten-free, it does help hold the baked item together better so it doesn't fall apart. And that's one of the challenges with gluten-free baking. So most of the recipes that I've found do have this xanthan gum in it. And I use only 1.5 teaspoons, and it is all natural. So I put it in, and it doesn't make it weird at all. It actually makes it quite good. So baking soda. You need 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda and 2.5 teaspoons of baking powder. Now, when you buy baking powder, make sure that it's aluminum-free. Okay? The traditional baking powder out there has aluminum in it. You do not want that one. 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 2/3 cup of organic sugar, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/2 cup of oil, 1 teaspoon vanilla, 1/4 cups mashed banana, 1 cup blueberries, and 2 eggs beaten. So you want to mix all the wet ingredients together, and you're going to mix the dry ingredients together. So in one bowl, you're going to put the gluten-free flour, the baking powder, the baking soda, the salt, and the cinnamon, and put that together. And then in the other bowl, you're going to mash the bananas, and then you're going to mix it in with the sugar and the eggs and the oil. Then add the vanilla, and then you're going to add the dry ingredients to the wet ingredients, and at the very end, fold in the blueberries. And then you're going to prepare cupcake tins, either with cupcake liners, or you can spray the pans and dust them with the gluten-free flour. Either one is fine. And then spoon the batter into the tins. Fill each cup like 3/4 of the way. And you're going to bake it just until a toothpick or a knife comes out clean. And this takes about 15 to 20 minutes. And it yields 12 muffins, and they're delicious. I actually went one step further. It's not on the recipe, but I actually put a crumb topping on top as well. And to make it crumb topping, it's just oil, a little brown sugar, oats, and I used walnuts, but you can use pecans or any nut. And just make a mixture with that and just sprinkle it on top. And it just, makes it a little extra delicious. And so that was my recipe for the week. So now I would like to introduce to you Sarah Gabriel. She was living out in Colorado for the past 16 years and 2 years ago moved to the East Coast. She's living in Philadelphia now. And she's an educator, speaker, author, organizational artist, and socially conscious entrepreneur. And through all these roles, the common thread has always been an agent of change. She's a change maker. And, as we talk to her more, you'll see why. Her books that she's written, The Wellness Calendar, gives weekly tips on stress management, communication, nutrition, and exercise. And her more recent book, The Unexpected Intimacy, Everyday Connections That Nourish the Soul, offers many short stories with fresh perspectives on building meaningful relationships and how in the 21st century, in all of our lives, it's so hard and so challenging to really take the time and make the time to build those relationships that are meaningful. And so, that's what her book talks about. For the past 2 years, Sarah's been the managing director at the Homegrown Institute, organizing community-centered, skill-focused, attention-driven events that teach home-scaled, sustainable, and regenerative practices. She's helping organize the conference coming up, Springing Good Intentions into Action, scheduled for March 24th and 25th. And one of the things I really loved about the Homegrown Institute is it really is scaled down for the homeowner. A lot of times the conferences, where they usually offer tracks for the homeowner and the farmer. This one is really more for the homeowner, so it's really really scaled down and is for the everyday person, so it's really great. Sarah, are you with me?
I am with you.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm a little bit stuck on the muffins there. I'm trying to think, do I have all this... I think the only thing that I'm missing is the blueberries that I have to go out and get.
Well, if you don't have the blueberries, they're pretty great, just as banana muffins, too.
Just bananas, right?
Yeah.
Or I could probably throw some peanut chips in or something.
You could.
Yeah.
Now, one thing, you can also even put chocolate chips in. Banana chocolate chip muffins are really great if you have some good fair trade chocolate chips.
I do.
Well, those are great as well.
Sunfire, fair trade.
There you go. Those are that's my brand.
Yep.
Good. Well, it was really a pleasure to, find out about all the different things that you've been involved in over the years.
Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Sure. How has your transition been from Colorado to Philadelphia?
Well, it's a return to Philadelphia. I grew up in Philadelphia, and I returned with my 15-year-old son, and we came back. My parents are still alive and kicking. My father's 91, my mother's 85, and they're still in the same house 60 years.
Wow, that's great.
And we came back to sort of, be here for them at this part of their lives. And I still have a lot of old friends here. A lot of people have not left.
That's great. So you could hit the ground running. And it sounds like you did. Now, did you start the Homegrown Institute, or was it already in the process of growing when you came on board?
No, I started the Homegrown Institute. I actually tried not to start the Homegrown Institute. Then I was compelled to start the Homegrown Institute. I spent about, maybe 6 months or so, as I was transitioning back to Philadelphia, I connected with a lot of the urban food systems, urban agriculture organizations in Philadelphia. There's a lot going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I connected in to see where might I anchor and where might I my skills would be needed and, where I could make my contribution. And after that 6 months, honestly, one of the things I felt was that it's a movement of young people who are all willing to work for no money and that I wasn't sure I'd really be able to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to not do this work. I thought, everything I've learned in the last 5 years, it really was, 5 years of intense study on my part to learn all this stuff about soil and compost and rainwater and things I didn't know before. I
mm-hmm.
learned a lot. But, okay, well, that's nice. I've learned it for myself. But it was really beyond me. I have to tell you, it was beyond me. I was compelled to do this. And, I mean, I am an event planner. That's kind of what I was put on the planet to do. And so I made a commitment last February. I made a commitment. Almost to the day. It was February 24th, a year ago, that I made the commitment that I was going to do this project.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got on board and, you know, started to find a site, because the site is critical, found a site, and then started to bring people on board with me.
Mm-hmm. So the Homegrown Institute is really just 1 year old?
It is 1 year old.
Wow. So this is your first conference coming up?
The first one coming up in March, and we have 60 presenters and 40 community partner organizations and a planning committee of 15 people and thousands of people who are interested, hundreds who will come, and thousands who are interested.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really, we've gotten a lot of traction and there's a lot of interest.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard, we had our first Long Island Small Farm Summit last year. And we were shocked that we sold out. I mean, we were doing it at the University, SUNY Old Westbury, and we had space for 600, and there was standing room only, and we were turning people away.
Right.
So this year we moved to Hofstra, where we can hold 1,100 people, and it went from a Friday to a Saturday. So I'm hoping that this is big enough as it is. We have, you know, another university lined up for next year if we need to go to 2,500, but we were afraid to jump too, you know, and grow too big too fast.
Well, and there's some, you know, interesting conversations that you have around that. I mean, part of, I'm not sure that I want the Homegrown Institute to get that big. I mean, we'll have to look at it at the model when it's over this time and see what's in the future. But it does shift. Conferences, you know, groups shift. There's moments of volume where groups shift. I used to coordinate a conference that was between 700 and 900 people.
What and conference was that?
That was a Jewish renewal conference, the
mm-hmm.
Aleph Kala.
Mm-hmm.
It's held all over the country. And in doing that, one of the things that we paid a lot of attention to, which we're still paying attention to even though this one's smaller, is how do you bring the small group sense into the large space? How do you allow people to ground in the space? For me, honestly, all the events that I've always ever planned have all had a notion of community building. They've all been about, in their most basic form, have really been about community building. On some level, the content is almost irrelevant, although that's not true. But, you know, on some level it is. It's really about building community. That's
mm-hmm.
where things happen. Things are happening in community.
Right.
And so you have to figure out how do you, you know, when people look from the outside at my job, what they see is managing tens of thousands of details. I mean, thousands of details we're managing, juggling
mm-hmm.
so many balls, so many. But actually, that for me, I don't think of as my job, even though it is on some level. For me, my job is that every person who comes should feel as quickly as possible that they belong.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens if they don't? They come and they think, I'm the only one here who doesn't know about organic gardening. I'm the only one here who doesn't compost. I'm the only one here who, whatever they have in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're doing that, guess what? The blood flow has left the frontal cortex. It's all in the limbic center, and they can't think. And they're not going to hear anything or absorb anything that's going on. So if we can immediately get people at the beginning to see where in this group of people, we bring everybody together at the beginning, and we actually feed back to them some information that we've asked on our registration form, which is not the ordinary information. We don't ask marital status. We don't ask occupation. We ask things like, what is your relationship to food consumption? We have a good list of things. How often do you cook at home? We ask questions like that.
Right.
What is your level of knowledge of your kilowatt consumption or your water consumption or your calorie consumption?
Mm-hmm.
And then we give people different answers, you know, choices to answer. And some of them are kind of funny, like, you know, the food one, and we say, do I really have to answer this? And the kilowatt hours, I don't know, but I'm going to go look it up right now.
Mm-hmm.
So then what we can do is we use that information in our orientation to help people to normalize their experience. That every, you know, 24% of the people said they have no clue about what Monsanto's role in the food system is.
Right.
So they don't have to feel like I'm the only one. So now we've accomplished that. We take that first 15 minutes, we've accomplished that. Now we can open up. Now we can start learning stuff. Because people are connected.
Right.
So that's for me where it all starts. It all starts with that place of connection.
Yeah, I'm so with you on that. I mean, I feel like that's a lot of what I do as well in Long Island is, you know, help bring together community. Because as I started getting involved in the food movement on Long Island, I realized there were lots of people doing lots of different things, but people weren't talking to each other. Everyone was doing it in their own little bubble.
That's right.
And a lot of us are treading the same water, and instead of propelling ourselves forward and really gaining gaining distance and moving along in this path, we're kind of spinning wheels because so many of us are doing the same thing instead of being coordinated.
Yes, spinning wheels, and sometimes also losing motivation. Like, I had a very interesting thing happen the other day. So part of what we're doing at the Homegrown Institute, it's all action. It's all hands-on. If it's a class where if you can learn it in a book, go buy the book. That's not what's happening at the Homegrown Institute. So one of the programs that we have are these tour, learn, and builds. We have six of them, three each day. And the idea is that in the morning you tour around. So for example, let's look for example chickens. You want to have backyard chickens. In the morning we're going to tour four different sites. To see four very different sites. In fact, if you think to yourself, I don't think I have space to do chickens, guess what? When you go to visit Mindy's site, which is the first one on the tour, mm-hmm. she has them back behind. You're going to think, if she can do it, I can do it. Because hers is like behind. The chickens are in a dog.
So did you actually get a bus where everybody's going together or everyone's driving separate cars?
You know, this is one of, you know, we have like 15 workshops happening at each time. So this is one of the 15 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
People have signed up for that, and there's a limit. You know, we're limiting the tour, learn, and builds. But so there's, you know, a group will go and they'll actually carpool. So they'll visit four sites, and then after lunch, there's a build part which they can continue to do or not, and people can jump in and out of that one. But there's a build part where they're going to actually build a chicken tractor. And we've set up kits. We have four or five kits set up where people can work in groups of two and three, and have 2.5 hours together. They'll learn how to build the coop. We're also doing that for the beehives. We're doing that for extending the growing season. That's actually one of our most popular ones, is the extending the growing season. How do you do that? So that was how I started this. I was going to tell you that little story. So we have most of our tour sites set, but we were looking for one more for the extending the growing season. And a neighbor of mine reminded me that around the corner down the street that somebody had a small little greenhouse in their backyard. So I went to the house, knocked on the door, introduced myself, told them what I was doing. And it turns out that the daughter is in horticulture school. And she had started some seeds inside. They weren't really using it. They weren't sure how they were going to use it. They also had a raised bed outside. But I talked with them a little bit about it. And, you know, we may or may not want to come on the tour, and that would be fine with them. I get home, and a day later, she sends me an email, 300 words, where she's profusely thanking me for inspiring her. She says, what does it take me really to do my lettuce seeds? So she did her seeds up. She's absolutely going to do it. They've cleaned out the greenhouse. Her mother's planning to do the low tunnels and the row cover right beside it. Mm-hmm. Where they have. So it was like a little bit of interest from someone in your community in what you're doing, a little bit of connection, and that propelled her forward.
Right.
You know, so this is what we're hoping to happen at the Homegrown Institute, that I'm going to get excited about something, and that because somebody standing next to me is either also excited in that or excited for me in my excitement, it will give me energy to actually come home and do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, sounds great. I think I might come as well.
Yes.
Come down and do some of those workshops, because I also have been talking about doing chickens. I've been talking about doing bees. And so often I'm involved in, you know, raising awareness about it, but I'm really not out there doing it myself. And so I think that the idea and the format of what you're doing is really great.
Right. Well, it's founded in some research that I did a really long time ago. When I was in college, I did my senior thesis in the healthcare administration department. We were analyzing data on a study of compliance with therapeutic regimens. Okay, now that sounds like, what's that all about?
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually looking at what helped people take their hypertensive medication. And that was the early emergence of this whole field of adherence. There's now a whole field of study. There's, you know, zillions of researchers who research in this area of adherence to therapeutic regimens. And I have applied that to all change, not just in the medical world. What's very interesting is that in 35 years of research, every single study has essentially drawn the same conclusions about what the significant factors are.
And what are they?
I'll bet you want to know what they are.
You bet.
Yes. So I call it the 3.5 significant factors. So the 3.5 significant factors. The first one is intrinsic motivation. You have to want to do it yourself. It's not because somebody else has told you to do it or that you should do it or that you should want to do it. You have to really want to do it yourself. The second one is access to resources. And that access to resources could be either time, money, geographic convenience, the proper information, actual stuff that you need to accomplish something. The third is social support. And that is somebody to either companion you with you, to witness what you're doing, to somehow hold you accountable.
Mm-hmm.
The half is that if there's a provider of the service, that you have a good relationship with the provider. You know, the idea is you have a teacher, you like your teacher, you're going to do better in the class. So what we actually know, there's not a whole lot of things human beings can say we know, but from this study that we've done over 35 years of research, we pretty much know that if you put those 3.5 factors in place for any goal you set for yourself, the likelihood of success skyrockets.
Mm-hmm.
So if we know this, so knowing this, the whole design of the Homegrown Institute is founded on that model. Everything that we do there pays attention to those 3.5 things. So the intrinsic motivation part.
Which is the half? Stuff. I have four things here. Why is one of them a half?
Half is because if there's a provider of the service, it may not be a provider.
Oh, okay.
Then
okay.
It doesn't always come into play.
Uh-huh.
That's why it's half. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, the intrinsic motivation people are bringing with them. But we're going to actually help people get clearer about it. People might say, oh, I want to do all these things. Okay, well, which one do you really want to do? Like, let's get a little clearer about what's the thing that you want to do so we can help people do that. Then, I mean, over the weekend, there's the access to resources. People have made the time. We've helped them to make the time. We have vetted the presenters. You know, one of the things that happened for me over the last 5-6 years of doing this work is I am not really an expert. The only thing that's there that I could really teach about is composting. But beyond that, I'm at the point where I know if somebody knows what they're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and I know if they're on a sustainable path in how they're teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I have vetted presenters in a way that, you know, people are going to get really good information. So there's good information. We're going to have we have a whole resource center we're going to be setting up so you can actually feel the stuff. You're going to be able to walk around, put the beehive veil on, see what that feels like to have a bee suit on. Like, is this you? You can put it on and say, gee, is this me?
Right.
You know, you can really, really try it on. So access to resources in big time. And then the social support thing, I mean, people have to do that themselves. But we are stressing it. We're setting it up. Every class will have a very brief but structured, it's like 4 minutes at the end, where people buddy up and they declare publicly, you know, to their witness what from the last couple of hours of class do they want to act on. And who's going to be the person in their life to hold them accountable?
Right.
So they say it. And what we know is, you know, not everybody's going to continue to, but what we know is that when you do that, you're more likely to do it.
Oh, absolutely. So I mean, you know, I know when I, you know, make a date with a friend, like we're going to walk in the morning, it's like because I've made that, you know, statement and I, you know, have engaged somebody else, I know that I will get up and out because... Right, it's going to happen. Whereas if,
right.
you know, I go to sleep and say, oh, I think I'll get up in the morning. The alarm goes off. No one's waiting for me. I could, you know,
right.
snooze a few more minutes or get up and walk. And depending on the weather, very often will affect my decision.
Yes, for sure. So we know this, and this is what we're about.
Uh-huh.
I say the Homegrown Institute is community-centered, skills-focused, action-driven. Those things are what we are all about.
Well, it sounds great. I want to talk more about that when we come back after our break because I know there's a lot of listeners out here that will want to be there. So give us a minute, and we'll be back in very shortly.
Look forward to it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Sarah Gabriel. She is the managing director and founder of the Homegrown Institute in the Philly area. And we've been talking about a conference that's coming up there called Springing Good Intentions into Action. And it's a conference scheduled for March 24th and 25th, and it just sounds like it's going to be an awesome, awesome conference. And so welcome back, Sarah.
Thank you.
I want to just let my listeners also know, if anybody is interested in calling in, the number here is 888-874-4888. And before I forget, can you give the email address or the website address if people want more information about this conference coming up?
Sure. It is thehomegrowninstitute.org.
Great. Great. Now, in the information on the website, you talk about the difference between sustainable and regenerative. What is the difference there?
Well, you know, people have been, we've been a little overusing the word sustainable. And when you look at sustainable, actually sustainable is relative. You know, what's sustainable for a short period of time may not be sustainable over a long period of time. I always like, you know, one of my all-time favorite comedians is George Carlin.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him talking about how, you know, save the planet. He says, let's get real. It's not about save the planet. It's about save us and the planet. What if we were put on the planet to make plastic for the next iteration of life, you know? And the scientists do actually theorize that, some say as long as 10,000 years, but some say it's happening, it's already happening, that there will be microbes that will form, that will feast on the plastic. That, you know, that 3 tons that's out in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have like a long-term perspective, we would say that those plastic bags, that's not unsustainable. It's just unsustainable for us, you know. So that word, to me, you know, when I bring down that word, I bring it down to basically the two things. I look at it as our relationship to consumption and waste and our resilience in the face of adversity.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two things I think about when I think of sustainability. But both of those things to me have a little bit of like a limping along image to them. And like I said, the sustainability is relative. Now, regenerative is a slightly different take on it. In the regenerative model, there is no such thing as waste. And in the regenerative model, what we say is that it's really a permaculture approach, that by observing and integrating instead of dominating, is that we make the whole system richer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different way of thinking. And when you start thinking in a regenerative way, what that means is that, you know, everything you do, I mean, for me, everything I do, I think cradle to cradle. I really do. Like, for the Homegrown Institute, we're doing it now. Anything we order, anything we are involved in, we think about what will happen after the conference. Where's it going to go? Who's it going to benefit? How can we use these things?
Mm-hmm.
We are, in our build projects, it's all reclaimed materials that we're using. You know, because again, we're not, each thing, I mean, even the women who are running the silent auction have, you know, on their list of things that they need are baskets to put, you know, gift baskets together. And I said, we're not, you know, they said, is there a budget to go buy some? I said, we're not going to do that. There are so many baskets around. How many do you have in your garage? There's so many around. So we got onto FreeCycle.
Mm-hmm.
And is FreeCycle, you have an active FreeCycle in your neighborhood?
Yes.
We got onto FreeCycle. We actually spoke with the moderator and okayed this. And what we did was, we just did it this last week. We sent out an FYI email on FreeCycle letting people know that the Homegrown Institute is coming up and that we're going to be posting over the next month periodically these lists of things that we need.
Mm-hmm.
And to let people know about that. So that's, you know, the wicker baskets for our silent auction is on the list, and it's going to come, you know, once a week. We're going to post that over the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't need to buy more of them. There are enough of them.
Right, right.
So that's that regenerative model, as you think. So for example, one of, to me, one of the most exciting content areas that we're going to cover at the Homegrown Institute that is an area that's actually the least developed. It is our only out-of-town presenter, and that is related to aquaponics.
Mm-hmm.
And are you familiar with aquaponics?
Yes. Well, Will Allen is going to be our keynote speaker at the Small Farm Summit.
Yes, I was up at Growing Power a few years ago. They're doing some wonderful things up there.
Right.
The aquaponics in the Philadelphia area, and actually in New York as well, is not real well developed.
Right.
And on a home scale level, it really isn't. So here we were going to do a tour, learn, and build for the aquaponics, but we realized that to do a tour around here to really see the aquaponics, you have to go up to Redding and over to Pendle Hill in the western part of the state, you know, western part of the area, or out to Cheney University. We couldn't do it locally. There wasn't enough happening locally for aquaponics.
Uh-huh.
The amazing thing about aquaponics, when you look at as a regenerative model, there's no waste. You get the fish, what would be fish waste, becomes veggie food.
Right.
What would be veggie waste becomes fish food.
Right.
And it uses, you know, 10%, only 10% of the water that gets used in conventional agriculture. And you can do it in your home. I mean, these are home-scaled. You can do a home-scaled thing in your garage.
Mm-hmm.
You should really all be learning how to do it, because on the list of things that are being depleted in our lives, fish is like at the top.
Fish is
the first thing that's going. And, you know, it is the major source of protein for most of the people on the planet. So we have to figure that one out. That's a global issue that we have to really start looking at locally.
Yeah, but as of right now, it seems like the only fish that they're really doing that with is tilapia.
Well, you can do it with tilapia. The reason they do it with tilapia is, first of all, because tilapia will grow in any kind of water.
Right. And really crowded conditions.
And they're really crowded, and they'll also grow. They grow pretty fast. 9 months, you can have tilapia. You can do it with other fish. I'm looking at possibly doing it with trout. The trout, you won't get as many. I mean, if you're going to do it as a business, you go to tilapia because that's, you know, you're going to get the volume. But if you're doing it for yourself at home,
mm-hmm.
you know, why not do trout? Now, the trout take a year and a half to grow, so it's going to be a little while till you have them. But then once you've got started, if you plant it right, every 3 months you bring in some new babies, then you every 3 months you've got your
Well, wouldn't they make their own babies?
Some fish then eat the eggs. They don't. You have to start out with, and then you have to capture the eggs and take them out of the tank and start them on another smaller tank.
Oh, really?
It's work. It's not just a big fish tank.
Well, that's one thing that I've really appreciated as I've gotten into just having a large garden. Just realizing the amount of work it is to really take on growing your own food. And when you think of, you know, generations ago, people did that. That's what they did. They grew their own food. They raised their own animals. They churned their own butter. They did all of the things that we now, you know, go to the supermarket and just purchase. They created it, and that was part of their life. And it, you know, it fed them, but it also exercised them. It kept them healthy. They were working hard, and
the whole system.
Yeah, it was a whole system, and I think, you know, one thing you said about the social.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was going to just say the one thing you said about the social support, I have found really to be essential. When people do things together, it's so much more fun. You know, if you're out, when I'm out in the garden by myself, actually, a lot of times I love it, but, you know, if I have a big project to do, it's so much easier, and it feels like a social hour if I'm doing it with friends than if I'm doing it by myself. You know, by myself, it can feel like drudgery and that I have to do it. And when I'm with other people, it becomes a social engagement, and it just changes everything. And so that's the whole, you know, the whole idea about barn raising, you know, that people used to do it together and, you know, take turns to each other's house, and it's, you know, really wonderful.
Right. And this is really, for me, this is one of the things that distinguishes the Homegrown Institute from other events. You know, in last fall, I went to one of these kind of traditional green events. Thousands of people, hundreds of vendors, 60-minute kind of assaultive edutainment workshops. And I went to one workshop that was actually great. I have to say I don't really remember what she said, but I remember when I was in it, it was really great. She was talking, the topic was about having your garden for the chickens and having your chickens help in the garden. It was like the nexus of chickens and gardening.
Right.
And she was a very good dynamic speaker. And as I came out, I noticed that there was a woman who I had just met once, who was, you know, kind of not exactly a neighbor, but was in a, we had a mutual friend. So I went over and reintroduced myself to her and had a nice little conversation about it, how we both enjoyed that workshop. And she said, you know, I've been wanting to have chickens, but the thing that stops me, now I'll tell you in a minute what stopped her, but what I found most interesting was this is a woman who is an activist. She's an environmental activist. She is a doer. This is not a woman who is stopped from doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow she wants to do this, but the context of this environment of the thousands of people, hundreds of vendors with this edutainment going on, didn't help her move beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I think that model of event was actually really good 10 years ago, and maybe even 5 years ago in terms of awareness raising. But our awareness is pretty high now. What it turns out for her, what the issue was, is that she lives in a community. She's like in a bedroom community. It's not exactly the community where she's active. And she feels like that she travels a bit and that there's nobody in her neighborhood who she could ask to watch her chickens
mm-hmm.
when she's away. Now, here's the thing. We have a local group here called COOP, Chickens Outside of Philadelphia. And it's a very loose group, but there's hundreds of people in it. And there are people in her town. She just doesn't know them.
Mm-hmm.
And I also said to her, you know what? You start talking to your neighbors about your chickens, I can guarantee you there's somebody who would be delighted to watch your chickens. What fun that would be for them.
Right. Well, you know, you hear that all the time with people with school gardens. They say they don't want to do school gardens because when the vegetables are coming in, that's in the summer when everybody's off, and who will take care of the gardens? Well, the people
right.
that I know that have been successful, all they did within one day, they put an email out saying, families come, you know, sign up for a week to take care of the garden, and you get to eat whatever you harvest. Well,
yeah.
within a day, every week was spoken for, and there was no problem in covering the garden at all.
When I first started talking about the Homegrown Institute and the skills part of it, the skills-focused part of it, I said the skills are in five areas. Physical skills of competency, social skills of community, intellectual skills of understanding, emotional skills, what's the emotional skills of? Oh, of your own self-awareness, and spiritual skills of interconnectedness.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of those things. We're not just looking about learning how to do things. We're learning about how to navigate. You want to have chickens in your backyard. You got to check in with your neighbors. There's, you know, always all these skills are all together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, the chickens. I just moved. Actually, I was in when we moved back from Colorado. We started out in an apartment, just trying to sort of get the lay of the land where we were going to be. And so I've actually just moved into a house in the end of November. So I now actually have space where I can start do all these things. And I have there's two neighbors here, and they say there's a third who are interested in chickens, but they don't want to have them in their backyard. And I said, I am happy to have them in my backyard, and I don't have to own them. So we're looking at doing the four families together. Everybody takes a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first week of the month will be mine. Second week will be theirs. And doing that together.
Right.
You share the expense. You share the work.
Right.
It's a nice thing. In Colorado, just before I left, there was a woman there who was doing what they started to call NSA instead of CSA, and NSA, Neighborhood Supported Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
She was identifying in a neighborhood area 10 different homes that had sun plots, you know, either in their front yard or backyard, that they didn't want to farm themselves, you know, little quarter acre, whatever. But she put 10 of them together and put a CSA kind of thing together using land in the neighborhood, people's front yards in the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And then those people became part of the shareholders as well as more, and they would volunteer and do it together in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. You know, I have a large garden. I've opened my garden up just to friends to help me. Come help me and take food home with you,
and
you know, because,
yeah.
you know, it's too much work by myself. And,
right.
And it's also too much food by myself. I mean, my kids aren't home anymore, although I give them food also because I, you know, I have enough to give away.
Right.
But you know, there's enough for everybody, and it just makes it so much nicer. I know friends of ours, you probably read years ago, there was a great article in the New York Times about, you know, couples that have gotten together, you know, four couples, and once a month they go to each other's house and spend the whole day doing projects, you know. It's like, so the four guys will do something together and the four women will do something together. And once a month, they go to someone else's house just right. to get projects taken care of.
Get them done. Raise the barn.
Exactly. And it's, you know, the more that we can bring people together to do things as communities, because I think the isolation of our society has had such detrimental impact that, and people don't even realize, you know, whether it's depression, right. whether it's, you know, loneliness, whether it's just the insanity of being so busy, you know, running your kids around, just the whole makeup just doesn't support relationships. And actually, that's one of your books, that whole book
yes.
that you wrote, Unexpected Intimacy, Everyday Connections That Nourish the Soul.
Yes. It's about that, about just a raised level of awareness of how all kinds of moments, it's not even moments that you'll just think of that would be, you know, deep conversation. There's all kinds of moments that you have where you have a moment of real connection, and you can, if you elevate it just slightly in your own consciousness, it is really nourishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're doing such great work. I'm really, really happy to have met you, and I look forward to coming to the conference. It really sounds like it's going to be a wonderful event.
Well, it's been delightful speaking with you and hearing what you're up to as well, and all the stuff that's going on in your neck of the woods.
Thank you. Well, I hope you can come to our conference. Mine will be a couple of weeks after yours, so I'll see you at yours.
Okay.
And again, if people want to find out about it, they go to thehomegrowninstitute.org, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And you got to watch that typing when you do institute. Everybody spells it wrong. I do it myself. You know, you got to get the right number of T's in there.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Sarah, for joining me. Everyone, it's been, we've been talking with Sarah Gabriel from the Homegrown Institute in Philadelphia. And this is Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And it's been wonderful being here with you for the past hour. And I look forward to being with you next week. And remember, starting March 7th, this show will be at 4 o'clock. So I hope you can make the switch and continue to join me. In the meantime, have a wonderful week, and I will see you next Wednesday at 5 o'clock. God bless.